Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So today I'm going to talk about, I'm going to share actually some results and our experience of yield forecast project that we did in Iowa. And to give you the big picture of what we did, the yield was one component. We also focused on the environmental performance, and we pay a lot of attention to soil water and soil nitrogen. So we went in the field and collect data. At the same time, we used the model to predict what's going to happen in the next 2 weeks. And we synthesized all this information, create a website, and release all this information to field agronomists. It was not publicly available. Now, let me start and tell you the story. When you want to do a forecast, everything depends on the question asked. And in our case, as you see here, is the other way. No, it's the other way. Which one? Okay, thank you. The yield was one component. Our main focus was what was in the soil, how much water and nitrogen we have in the soil today. How much water and nitrogen do we need in the next 10 days? We feel that these questions are very, very important for field agronomists. When they go to the field, they see the crops, but they don't have any information what's in the soil. So we wanted to provide this information. The yield was also, everyone wants to know what's going to happen at the end of the season, so it was a very important component in our analysis. Now, how we did it? This is the most important question. There are many ways to do it. So we combined the climate model because we wanted a forecast, a weather forecast, for the next two weeks. In the same time, we used actual weather data and historical weather data, and we synthesized, we made synthetic files. All these files went into the Apson cropping system model, where incorporated the climate, the soil, and the crop, and actually the Apson developed the forecast. At the same time, we collected measurements. Their measurements was to not to validate, it was to guide model predictions, to tell us that we are in the right track. Measurements did not replace Apson output variables. It was used to verify where we are going and if we are in the right track. And then we developed the website and released the information. This is the workflow, how we did it. Now, let me go for in each box and say a few more things. First of all, the climate model that we use. The name is Weather Research Forecast Model, and the main reason why we use this one is because we wanted radiation. And at the time of when we started this project, that was the best source for us. Now, how well was that forecast? I would say it was good, was not perfect. There is a lot of work to be done, but we need to deal. We have uncertainty in everything. We need to deal with that as well, and we need to include it in the game. So that was the model, weather research and forecast model. Here are some plots. I don't want to go into details. Here you can see the cumulative radiation. That's the easy plots to read, measured and predicted, and cumulative precipitation here in that side. Now, we go to the APSIM model. And as you know, APSIM is a model developed in Australia. And many ask me, why you are working with this model? My answer is, it's an international model. There are many users everywhere, more than 3,000 users to my information, to what I know. And there's a big publication record. How well APSIM does in Midwest? That's a good question. And usually people focus on grain yield. My answer, first answer is, yield, grain yield is not enough to judge model performance. If you see the model, there is the organic matter, there is the nitrogen, water, and crop. We really need to check everything if we want to have a good answer. So far we have made a number of publications looking not seasonal, but long-term, 5 to 10 years data. And you can go and see the publications and what we did. In general, the model performs well. But what I want to focus and stay in my publication and to share some results with you, some ongoing studies. And really I want to say that the value and to acknowledge the value of long-term data. If we really want to calibrate the models, that's only possible if we use long-term data. And this is because some processes like mineralization and mobilization takes time. This is an example. This is an ongoing study. Here you see the yield and the nitrogen rate from 1999-2013. And the points are the measurements, the red lines are the simulations. There's one more line, a gray dashed line, is the uncalibrated model. We provide both. So this is a very important data set for us to make sure that this process works well. At the same time, we have soil organic carbon data and we check the model. Now, setting up the model, we came up to a dilemma. How to do it? What options do we have? The simpler the better, or to get the right answers for the right reason? Everything depends on the questions that we ask. So what we did was to look where we are and what we have in our location. So as you see here in Midwest, there is a lot of groundwater. And to improve the management and to increase the yields, farmers have installed tile drainage. The depth of the tile drainage is about 1 meter. This is a good indication where the groundwater is. This is very important how we set up the model because it has to do with the roots. Roots do not grow into the water. And this changes all the story in the modeling process. We collected data. We didn't have data, but we collected this season. And we were able to get some good estimations and prediction of groundwater. This is just example plot where here you see the water table. The units are millimeters. The green points are the measurements. And the blue line, simulations by the model. So you see it's about 1 meter, 1.2, and goes up and down. That was for one side. Now, we move from the models and we go to the measurements and the cropping system. It was the first year and we really wanted a lot of information, but we didn't include spatial locations, many locations, but two locations, and within these two locations we collected as much information as possible. So we had two locations, Ames and Sutherland. We had two crops, corn and soybean, and we had two planting dates, early and late. That was helpful to get good, robust parameters for the cultivars. And we use standard management practices. The sites were without tile drainage, but shallow groundwater. This is even more difficult. Because when we have tiles, when the water table goes up, the water goes out. But when we don't have tiles, the water goes up. And this makes the simulation process very complex. Measurements. Before the forecast, we took soil profile measurements in order to estimate all the parameters needed for the APSI model. And for the AIM side, we did the sampling on time, but for the other side, we delayed and we used web soil survey information. In-season measurements. We basically focus in the top 30 centimeters and we set up sensors to measure soil water and soil temperature in every layer, the first three layers. In the same time, we measure groundwater table, and over the season, every week, we measure nitrate, 0 to 30 centimeters, and ammonium. Going to the crops, we harvest the crops every 10 days, corn and soybean crops, and we measure biomass production, partitioning, tissue, seed, and N concentration, leaf area index, phenology, almost everything. And in the same time, for the final yields, we harvested a big area to judge the model performance, and we track the roots. And this is the website, the information that we released every second week. We released a lot of information. When we set up this project, we didn't know which is the most important information to release, what farmers want to know. And we're still working on that. We're going to receive some feedback from the people who use this forecast. Briefly, we provided the weather forecast, the rain and precipitation. I don't know if you can see here, there is a little bit of red line. This is a two-week forecast. Going to the biomass, you see the points, the measurements. Whatever we measure, we process very, very quickly, and we upload in the website. Some people don't like model predictions. They like the measurements. So we gave everything there. It was tough for the model to do everything and to make right. So biomass was another prediction. Temperature, soil temperature. You see the points, the line, the blue line, and the forecast. Soil moisture, lines from the model, point simulations. Soil nitrate, And this is the forecast, the end of season forecast using probabilities, medium, 10% and 90%. And this is another piece of information that we released, and was really important. People really appreciate this information. How much water and nitrogen do I need for the next 10 days? The crop. Is there enough in the soil to support this? Shall we take any action if there is time? So that was very important. And now I go to the validation of the forecast, what we did. This is the last forecast that we released, was September 12. So we maintain this information, we still have it in the website, and we measure using the large area plots and also combine, and we plotted all information there. So you see here is the grain yield. The green bar is the combined measured with the standard error. We had everything replicated. And the next one is the hand measured with the standard error. And the red one is the model prediction. And we did that for every cropping system. So we go to corn, aim southern, two locations, early late, again early late. And then we go to soybean. So this is how well the model did. And also we plotted the data differently to see the error, how good or how bad we were. Now, with the exception of one cropping system, in general the prediction was plus minus 10%. But everything comes down to the question, how much accuracy do we want? Is it possible to go to 1%? Where is the spatial variability? So we really need to think what we really want and how we should use models to assist in season management. How much time do I have?
We have 3 minutes.
Oh, okay. I have to speed up. Now, one statement, we release forecast every 2 weeks. And one statement that was discussed a lot was July 14. We provide forecast and we made some statements about the water stress, about the temperature, and we did something about the nitrogen. And we say that nitrogen, what we have in the soil today, is sufficient to support yield up to 225, no more. And this is, I want to highlight here how we can use a mechanistic model to get information. What we have in the soil, and based on what we expect with the weather, how much we can get. We didn't say about nitrogen limitation. How much is possible with what we have in the soil today? Now, there are different categories of mechanistic approaches. The more you add in the model, the more prediction power, explanatory power, but also complexity. And basically, this is what we did this year. There are trade-offs in all this. The more you ask, or the simplest, the more applicable, and you can generate in many, many locations. So that was basically what we did the first year. At the end of the first year, which was October, we got all the data. We start setting up the model for the next year. And some quick measurements, how the model predicted and simulated the data. This is the soil nitrate data that we collected. The lines are model predictions and the points are measurements. The model did well, but what I really want to say here is the resolution of the data. I'm really happy to have this high resolution data set to work with. That was a really good data set. Crop measurements, crop phenology and yields. I don't like the flowering date, maturity date. I like to use the physiological observations, where here you can see the grain accumulation, the start and the end point, and the measurements that we took in the season. Here you see the red ones are 1 square meter. Then you see the green one is the 5 square meter, and the orange one is from the combine. So we put everything to see where we are and how the model performs. And here we have the same hybrid for the early and late. And a little bit about soybean. Here I'm going to show the partitioning of biomass in the soybean. So you see the biomass, the stem, the fruit, which is potency together, the leaf, and here you see the leaf defoliation. We try to simulate this as well. And pods and grains. Now, since we have the model ready, we can answer questions. What happened in 2015? What limited the crops? Water, nitrogen, temperature, radiation, what? In 2015, indeed, in Ames, Iowa, in that cropping system, we reached potential. The gap is very, very little. And the answer why we reached potential is not because we did a very good management, but because the potential went down. How I know this one? By making a time series of model simulations. And then I compared two different years to find out the reason. We had a lot of rain, so this means lower radiation, and we had some cold temperatures at the grain filling period. And also, what we could have done better in 2015, we did a scenario analysis, and we explored different options, and we provide yield, nitrogen loss during the growing season, and the economic part. And we can simply select the best options. I know I don't have much time. This is my last slide. So what's next for us? Next year we are going to add 3 more sites to cover better Iowa. We are going to continue measurements, improvements in the website. Most likely it's going to be publicly available. And one last statement about using models as decision support tools. What we did in this year was the in-season forecast, where we tried to provide information to alert farmers, field agronomists, and to adapt management. And we provide a little bit of post-season evaluation, what could have been done better or what happened in 2015. One thing that we are going to invest next year is the pre-season decision, where we include the risk analysis, 30 years of weather, to identify the best nitrogen rate and hybrid combination. And with that, I'm going to stop. That's all.